The title of this morning's sermon, Abundance of the Heart, is perhaps familiar to some of you as a part of 20th century theologian Paul Tillich's words, "Without the abundance of the heart, nothing great can happen." Our theme for this month of November is abundance. So some synonyms in my toolbox included profusion, plenty, wealth, richness, copiousness, lavishness, and great quantity. Without the abundance of the heart, nothing great can happen. It occurred to me that that might depend on what one's heart is abundant of. And that is really the meat of our conversation this morning, that and how we express it, our abundance, that is. Whatever it is, how we share it with the world, both near and far. I want to thank Brothers Bruce and Gio for joining us to share this special time in their calendar this morning, to help us understand the abundance of connection with those who have gone before us at this time, when the veil is thin and our hearts may be full of gratitude. In a well-known essay called The New Being, which was first published in 1955, existentialist philosopher and theologian Paul Tillich, who I just mentioned, uses the gospel reading we heard this morning from the book of Mark. That's a great sound. To talk about abundance. I thought it was a spirit or something. I'm like, what is that? Maybe it was somebody's phone, you know, how they have those different rings on. Sorry. Anyway. He used the gospel reading from Mark that we heard this morning to talk about abundance. He references the woman who uses very expensive oil to anoint Jesus' head in anticipation of his death, as an example of an action based in wildly abundant love. Rich, lavish, of great quantity. The disciples, who are also gathered at this meeting, are indignant and remind her, this ointment might have been sold for more than 300 denarii and given to the poor. What was she thinking, throwing caution to the wind in such a random and seemingly thoughtless fashion? Can you imagine being witness to this event? How often do we each calculate the relative value of our things, or our time, or our actions? How much, we wonder, should we spend on a particular gift, for example? How long can we afford to be on vacation with our loved ones? How much do we give to our favorite causes or our church? We are caught in a consumerist culture, to be sure. Everything has a cost. Time, even, is money, right? The woman's act seems so impulsive with all of that in mind. But no, Tillich argues, this was not a cavalier gesture. This was not rampant misuse of something valuable worth lots of denarii. This woman's action, using an expensive resource as a blessing, was what Tillich called a holy waste, a waste growing out of the abundance of the heart. She could have gotten lots of money for the oil, of course, and done something worthy with it, fed the poor, healed the sick, as the others pointed out. But hers was an act of self-surrender, he says, an ecstatic reaction to the abundance of love she felt for her teacher. Tillich joins Jesus in applauding her abandon, in giving in to the impulse to share her love so flagrantly. Let her alone, he says. Why do you trouble her? She's done a beautiful thing to me. What might that feel like, I wonder? To have a heart so full of love that the practical implications of an action matter least of all. The value of the lost resource is irrelevant to the joyful expression of abundance. I wonder if you have felt that. A time when cost, whatever it was, simply didn't matter because your heart was so full and the expression was so necessary. Tillich warns us, in fact, that having too few occasions to be so spontaneous, to be so wasteful of convention and of rules, to have too few is harmful to us. People are sick, he says, not only because they have not received love, but also because they're not allowed to give love, to, in effect, waste themselves. Has not Protestantism, big word, and he was writing in the 50s, so this would have included us, more or less. Has not Protestantism lost a great deal by losing the wasteful self-surrender of the saints and the mystics? Are we not in danger of a religious and moral utilitarianism which always asks for the reasonable purpose? It is a tempting invitation, isn't it, to throw caution to the wind, to love with abandon, to offer what is fullest in our hearts towards what we feel compelled to love or to change or to serve. Well, tempting, though perhaps the act itself is not so familiar to many of us. We Unitarian Universalists can be a relatively cautious crowd, right, where love and faith are concerned, and a rather pragmatic one, utilitarian, as Tillich suggests, busy with cost-benefit ratios and inclined to rational considerations or perhaps intellectual considerations, particularly in matters of the spirit. And the invitation assumes that our hearts are full of love, which begs the question this morning, what are your hearts full of? Tillich takes his phrase, abundance of the heart, from a line in Matthew, actually. For out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. The comparison here in the Gospel of Matthew is between good and evil, suggesting that what comes out of our mouths is a reflection of what is in our hearts. How can you speak good when you are evil? Sometimes biblical references are just very practical. Sometimes they provide such simple, direct wisdom, if a bit binary. You'll either speak with love because you are full of love, or speak with evil because your heart is full of evil. What if the heart, your heart, or anyone's heart, is not such an extreme dichotomy of good or evil? What if your heart is full of pain or despair? What if your heart is full of sadness or anger? What if your heart is full of frustration or regret? Then what does your mouth speak? Or what if your heart is full of love for the earth, but not those who are making profits by destroying it? Or your heart is full of love for some people, but not all people? We have an abundance of emotions inside us, which are not always love. What then? Would we want pain or anger or sadness to spill out as recklessly, as abundantly as love? I think we have some choice here that may require some intersection between head and heart. One of my favorite poets and writers was the Reverend Clark Wells. He crossed paths with me, though, prior to my service at both Newton and in Weymouth. I tried for years to get a publication of his writings through Skinner House Books. Not everyone was convinced. He struggled with depression, with obesity and alcohol addictions. He was familiar, I'm guessing, with the emotional complications and not always perfectly aligned with love, not always love abundant, perhaps. You might recall a story he relates of a child demanding his attention at a star during the holidays, but he was busy with practical things and not inclined to take the time to notice. The child was frustrated and insistent on Wells' attention. "You be glad at that star," he demanded. Have you heard this story? Wells is brought up short and recognizes the possibility of missing this moment, of missing an abundant love, perhaps, and chooses to redirect his course. One of my favorite lines: "If we cannot impel ourselves into stellar gladness," he says, "we can at least clean the dust from the lens of our perception. If we cannot dictate our own fulfillment, we can at least steer in the right direction. If we cannot find abundant love each and every time we want to, we can at least make the effort to move ourselves in that direction. We don't have to fall victim to the emotions that would disconnect us from each other, from our world, at least not indefinitely. But it means, as always, paying attention and practicing the habit of abundance, the habit of abundant love for ourselves, for each other, for those who came before us, for all creatures. Gerald Massey, who wrote the stanzas of the poem we heard earlier, grew up in rural England in the early 19th century. His early life was extremely poor. He worked in a silk factory, then in the fields. He was entirely self-educated. "There lives a voice within me, a guest angel of my heart, and its sweet lispings win me till the tears a trembling start. Up evermore it springeth, like some magic melody, and evermore it singeth this sweet song of songs to me. This world is full of beauty as other worlds above, and if we did our duty, it might be full of love." Is it our duty to love? Maybe. If we want a world of beauty, a world of justice, a world of generosity, maybe it is our duty to fill our hearts with the abundance of that which will incline us to flagrant expressions of joy and giving, to heeding less the calculated amounts and more the experience of holy waste. Or maybe it is simply a function of being open to the abundance of love whenever and wherever we find it, over and above the mundane. Beyond recognition, even, I hope we will consider some encouragement of expression. We are so practical. We're so accustomed to restraint in New England. We're so measured in our analyses. Okay, this is perhaps one of those moments where I should use I statements only. I am so practical. I am accustomed to restraint. I am measured. Do not greedily preserve your time and your strength for what is useful and reasonable, Tillich suggests. Keep yourselves open for the creative moment which may appear in the midst of what seemed to be waste. Recently, I was arrested as an act of civil disobedience, and someone asked me how it felt. And I said it felt privileged. It gave me an opportunity to put my values into action. It felt like the kind of expression that I want to be more actively engaged in, though not necessarily getting arrested all the time. In a recent speaking engagement at the Bedford Unitarian Universalist Church, environmentalist Bill McKibben apparently looked around the audience of, well, let's just say seasoned adults, and asked something like, what are you waiting for? In effect, what are we saving ourselves for? When we get to that place of recognizing our abundance, what is it that keeps us from showering it on others? Is it fear? Is it control? Is it constraint? Is it lack of practice? Mightn't we be setting a better example for those who come after us if we let it go a bit more often? I mentioned to a few of you last week that at the end of the service, I wish we had danced. We had these amazing musicians who offered us autumn leaves as a postlude, and we sat and appreciated. But we could have danced, and that wouldn't have cost us anything but a bit of pride, perhaps. On this morning, when we have honored many of those who have gone before us, the souls and saints who have paved the road to our doors, let us consider practicing abundant love's abandon together. How about let's challenge ourselves to be a bit more risky, a bit more wasteful, if you will, on behalf of the things that would benefit from a wild expression of our abundant love. Clean the dust from the lens of our perceptions and put ourselves out there. The world needs that. And truth be told, we all need that. Let's be bold with our abundant hearts. If Tillich is right, that is when great things happen. So may it be.